Welcome to Emigo Podcast 11.20. I know we were told not to do any more necromancy, but someone comes alive in the first segment. All right, guys, I had music in my Uber.
Again?
I mean, there's usually music, right? We talked about the dirt roads in Ann Arbor, which are strange. What? It's not... Don't be disappointed in me for living on a dirt road.
Just laughing at your experiences.
But, like, usually we kind of noodle around and then we have a segue. But, in this case, the music is the segue. Do you know what it is?
I'm scared to ask, almost.
Do you know what it is?
Take Me Home, Country Roads?
No. Frampton comes alive. I mean, yeah, Liver's back. He's back.
Okay,
from the dead.
Okay, yeah.
You got Michigan like beating Michigan State.
I see.
You got some noodling on a guitar.
Do you, Ace? Do you see something there?
I mean,
Frampton comes alive.
I can see the very, you know, obvious coming alive.
He's squinting so hard over there.
And it wasn't like an XM station. This guy was listening to the album. He was like
had a record player in the car and was just like spinning that vinyl. Yeah.
With the generator next to him.
And we had a little conversation about dirt road and he's like, yeah, I live on a dirt road. And I was like, I already knew that. I didn't say that.
Well, you did.
That was probably smart.
Yeah. I didn't want to get kicked out of my Uber.
That's a good play.
Although that would have been kind of like a Big Lebowski callback, so that would have been awesome, except that I wouldn't be here.
It would have made for a more interesting intro. We just would have been late in doing
this
it.
This was pretty good.
Yeah, it's all right. We should probably get to the sponsors, though.
Oh, yeah. The sponsors. I'm sorry, sponsors. I just wanted to talk about Michigan State. I like talking about Michigan State when we win games.
You really do.
It is more fun than talking about it when we lose. Not,
anyway, we'd like to thank our sponsors. Our title sponsors are UGP and the Bow Store. We are, of course, recording this live from the residence in Ann Arbor downtown. Our other sponsors are Homeshore Landing, Peak Wealth Management, the University of Michigan Alumni Association, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Michigan Law Grad, Human Element, the Phil Klein Insurance Group, The Athletic, and Fuego Box.
Very professional podcast.
This is...
What's your name?
Better than usual. I'm Brian Cook.
I am Ace Ambender.
David Nasternak.
There we're back.
You can't say that we're a very professional podcast.
He's not even gonna say
my name is just David Nasternak.
He's going to start doing it like James Bond at some point, and then we're really going to hit a hole.
Nast.
I didn't think of that.
Ernak.
Yeah. Good stuff, Ace.
Yeah. Anyway,
no, I'm just, you know,
notes for next week.
Can we do this now?
I guess.
Michigan 77, Michigan State 68. Frampton comes alive.
There it is.
You know, a lot of things we could start with, but to me, let's start with Franz Wagner because he didn't score in the first half, and he still might have been the most impactful player on the court.
Did anyone score in the first half?
No. So two steals early. He has two blocks, one of which is kind of ridiculously called a foul.
Yeah, we do get a good Wagner face out of that.
We do. He has two tie-ups. He takes a charge from Cassius Winston. He has an assist, and, you know, he hasn't been shooting well. I think everybody knows that.
Yeah.
But for him to be able to have so much impact without having the ball, well, it's a little like Mitch McGarry for this one game.
A very skinny German Mitch McGarry.
I want to see him throw an outlet pass now.
He did a 7 defensive rebounds, so, you know,
yeah,
he's got opportunities to do that.
He's really kind of turned on his rebounding at both ends of the floor.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting to see that Michigan, you know, both with Wagner and with Brandon John, seems to be getting more aggressive on the offensive boards.
Yeah. I mean, because even though Wagner doesn't pull down any in this game, it felt like he had a couple. And Michigan has three team offensive rebounds in this game. I would guess that Wagner's hands were involved in at least one or two of those.
And Hans is probably right.
Hans.
Yeah.
His Hans grabbed the ball.
Franz.
That was
slipped
great.
Into German.
That was great.
Franz is Hans.
I'm going to do that intentionally from now on.
I started calling J-Mo Zemo because he's Slovenian.
Yeah, he's now Slovenian.
Well, didn't Stuart Douglas have a tweet about
that? Yeah, Stuart Douglas gave him a solid nickname.
Yeah, so now he's Zemo. Anyway, so Michigan...
His middle name is now Luca.
Michigan out-rebounds Michigan State in this game. So they get 33% of their misses. Michigan State gets 26% of their misses. I haven't looked this up, but I can't remember the last time Michigan won on the boards against Michigan State.
Yeah, certainly not decisively.
No.
Like that, to, for it to be like a
two or three possession average.
Yeah, that's
advantage.
Well, Michigan State played a lot of height in this game, too.
Yeah, and I mean,
they were missing Thomas Kithier, who is a good offensive rebounder. You know.
All right, so Brian now is holding up air quotes a number of times.
And, you know, I mentioned in the lead up to this game that, you know, both Kithier and Marcus Bingham were kind of disasters at center.
Yeah, I mean, the on off splits for Kithier were just
awful. But when he's playing alongside Tillman, they're not as bad.
Okay.
Yeah, the major problem with both those guys is just that they cannot function as the lone big.
Yeah.
But that hurt State's rebounding a little bit, but I still, that shouldn't have impacted it that badly, especially with the amount of length that they could throw out there.
No, and over the past month, there's been, I think, three or four games where Michigan's ability to go get offensive rebounds has really helped them out.
Yeah, against good rebounding teams, too.
I believe matches the entire Beilein era.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing about Franz is he's just so uniquely shaped.
Yeah.
Because he's so tall, but he plays like generally against players that are smaller than he is.
Yeah, he got switched on to Winston a couple times in this game. Winston couldn't do anything with him. Like, Franz is able to take a bit of a step back, and so he's able to cover anything laterally. And then he's still so long that when Winston jacked up a three, it was heavily contested. So,
I mean, if he bulks up, does Michigan even have like a comp for him?
Karras is the closest I got.
But he's like multiple inches shorter.
No, Karras is 6 foot eight.
Karras is 6'8"? More like, I think he's more 6'6 or 6'7, but he's super lanky.
Okay.
I mean, Karras is the...
So, and I guess we never really got to see like the fully functioning Karras.
We had a
post about this on the site when we do our like of the decade for basketball, but...
I'm still convinced that Karras would have won National Player of the Year in 2016.
Uh-huh. I listed
his numbers were bonkers.
Yeah, and against good comp.
So. Absolutely bonkers.
But anyway, that's something to be sad about later. Michigan also finally wins from the three-point line.
So oh, my goodness.
They hit 39% of their multiple wide-open threes.
They shot better from three than two.
After starting terribly,
they hold Michigan State to 26%. A 26% that seems honestly pretty fair. Because, like, Lawyer had an open look. Winston had one catch-and-shoot look. I think Arns had one.
And then he made.
And, you know, the rest of it was like, that's not a great shot.
The rest of them were Chucks or Xavier Tillman taking the three, which Michigan was happy to give up.
And sort of the story of this game is, like, so Xavier Tillman is a 29% three-point shooter on about 38 attempts. So you have really not much evidence of what his true shooting potential is. And Michigan gambled, and they were like, Xavier Tillman can shoot threes. Michigan State gambled and said Xavier Simpson can shoot threes. Tillman was 0-3. Simpson was 4-7.
Yeah, and Michigan also did playing into that, they switched up their pick-and-roll coverage in the last game. They were hedging hard on Cassius Winston, and that largely took the ball out of his hands unless he wanted to go into isolation situations, and Michigan did a good job of...
Eli Brooks did a good job.
Yeah, specifically Eli Brooks did a fantastic job of playing man defense on Winston, making life tough on him, and he goes 2-for-10 on twos. So anytime he was trying to attack the basket, it wasn't going great. He had 9 assists the last game, only 6 this time out, had 3 turnovers. He doesn't crack a 100-0 rating, which if you can do that as, I guess, Cassius Winston, you're probably winning.
Yeah, and so is interesting contrast from earlier in the year when, you know, you still have Simpson on Peyton Pritchard, even after Peyton Pritchard scores like 12 straight Oregon points, and you kind of feel like, I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of ego in the way, like Simpson is and has been kind of the alpha dog on defense, at least at the point guard spot for a couple years.
And very good.
Yeah, very, very good. And like, so to see Michigan go into a game and say, all right, we're going to put Eli on Cassius Winston. I mean, I think that factors into the fact that, you know, Simpson actually outperformed him offensively. So he doesn't have to put in as much effort on defense. So his legs are a little fresher. He's able to shoot from three. He has 8 assists and 3 turnovers. Like, that was an adjustment that I think was a good one, along with blitzing the screens. And that's encouraging, you know, to see both Xavier Simpson, like, accept that, like, and also for Howard to be able to do it.
Yeah, that he was pushing those buttons. He seemed to make... I mean, because not only did Michigan adjust very well in their pick-and-roll coverage, but transition defense was so, so, so much better than it was in the first game.
People actually getting back and checking their man.
I don't think I remember a Michigan State made basket after a Michigan made basket
on the run. There were a couple.
There wasn't one that was like, oh, you just beat everybody down the court and I'm tearing my hair out.
Yeah, there were a couple of awkward cross matches. There was a Winston three that Wagner fouled him on.
Yeah.
That was very early, and I think that was partially because they were pushing the
There tempo. Was a really bad cross match possession that Michigan got bailed out by a miss on, too, that I remember specifically. But for the most part...
So much better.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not remembering a stream of layups that are trying to put me in an early grave.
But that's a huge point, Juwan, right? Because, I mean, still going through the first year, you're trying to find coaching points to make evaluations, and we saw what has happened to Michigan in different scenarios previously in the last month or plus.
Yeah.
A lot of those things didn't happen in a big game. I mean, you know, Michigan's obviously where they are in their season, but to play against Michigan State and make those adjustments and win a game like this because of coaching moves is like a very encouraging sign.
Yeah, and after the first game, Howard said that they had worked on it and that, you know, the team just hadn't done it. And
yeah.
That's something that you can say, I think, once.
Yeah.
Like the first
you
time
get, you can get away
that,
with
you get
that,
one card and
it's like
it.
Okay, now you better practice that.
Right. And so now they've obviously got it down a lot better.
I mean, we should mention that it certainly makes coaching adjustments easier when you have your most versatile and arguably best player on the floor.
Yes.
A good coaching move playing Isaiah Livers is a solid.
I mean, because not only is Livers good in this game, he drops an efficient 14 points, kind of kickstarts Michigan's run after a really rough start by both teams in this game.
Yeah, he has the
God,
block.
God, it was hideous.
He has that block at the end of the game that's the dagger.
Yeah. And that was the second block of the game, also as a steal. He's disruptive, but it also means that Brandon Johns becomes your backup four, and Brandon Johns is a very good backup four.
Yeah.
And Michigan, well, they still did it a little bit. It very much eliminated the need to play two bigs at the same time, unless Juwan Howard wanted to do that.
There was
a
period toward the end of both halves where they were playing a giant lineup with like Wagner at the two, Livers, and then Davis and Teske.
Yeah, and I think we'd all like to see maybe an adjustment where Johns is in those lineups instead, and you get a Wagner, Livers, Johns middle of the lineup.
That would be an interesting thing to explore.
It's intriguing. I would like to see it more than Davis playing the second big out there, because I think he's a very fine backup center at this point. And I mean, you know, passable backup.
He's passable. Yeah.
He's efficient on the offensive end.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, which is what you're. I mean, like he's going to give up some buckets on defense because he's not that mobile or athletic.
Right. Yeah.
But if he's going to be this efficient at finishing, then you can survive the 5 to 10 minutes a game that you need him out there. And we also saw late in this game, Michigan goes, I mean, I think it was mostly so they could switch everything and get fouls quickly and not give up threes, but they did put Johns at center briefly.
Yeah, that was definitely an end game. Yeah. No threes.
But it does, you know, it does open up the possibility where if you're playing a team with a certain style, you might look to that lineup again.
If we play last year's Indiana team.
Yes.
Basically.
Yeah. Yeah. Where you got a 6'7 dude at center.
5'2". Juwan Morgan was 5'2".
Wow. He's shorter than Foster Lawyer now.
He's got an inch shorter every day.
The gnome!
Speaking of Johns, Ace, what did you think of his block?
It was emphatic on Marcus. It showed where Brandon Johns and Marcus Bingham are respectively in the weight room department, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, but the Livers block and the Johns block were, I thought both of those were buckets. And those are the best blocks.
Yeah.
When it's like, rescue.
Absolute erasure.
Yeah.
And Michigan basically renders Marcus Bingham unplayable in this game. He only plays 9 minutes, misses his only two shots, only pulls down a couple rebounds, gets emphatically stuffed.
Yeah. Well, his on-off splits are pretty bad, so like I don't...
Yeah, I was going to say, so you were looking
that up. They are very bad when he is at center. They are amazing on defense when he is at the four next to Tillman. So even though they drop off on offense, they still have a pretty positive efficiency margin.
Well, that's pretty interesting because the reason that I think Davis was out there in the giant lineup is because Bingham was playing the four.
Yeah.
And Davis did finish through him at one point.
Yes, Davis finished through his chest.
So that was, I mean, that was interesting that Michigan could. I just think you could get the, I think Brandon Johns can also finish through Marcus Bingham's chest.
Or and also, a lot of people could, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, because Bingham is a string bean right now.
He's basically Colin Castleton.
Yes. So, yeah, it, you know, Liver's coming back really opened up a lot.
It turns out that's good.
That's very important to this team. I mean, because speaking of Castleton, does not play in this game because this was not a good game to have a string bean four out there or a string bean center. So, I mean, especially, you know, Michigan State is able to play Tillman 37 minutes. So even, I mean, because he's not having the greatest game, but he's still a major upgrade over any other option they have.
I mean, he's just fantastic really good on defense.
Yeah.
Like, Teske and Tillman just kind of canceled each other out. Like, I didn't understand why teams kept posting it.
Yeah, I mean, Michigan State shoots 38% on twos. Michigan shoots 36% on twos. This was just not a game to venture inside the arc, really.
I mean, Tillman was a little better on offense than Teske was.
Yeah, but like...
A little bit, but most of his stuff was... I mean, that was mostly on putbacks.
Putbacks, yeah.
And part of Michigan's game plan also involved letting him shoot.
Well, yeah, so that's true.
I mean,
so...
I don't know. I don't think he's like an early entry guy, but if he goes... Man,
he's an interesting...
I would enjoy that.
I would appreciate him going.
Because who's playing center for them next year? Kithier?
Because that usually happens at Michigan State.
Well, it's true.
Yeah.
I don't know how many grandmas he's got locked in that basement. But Tom Izzo's got a lot of grandmas locked in the basement. He doesn't even let them out.
So before we get too off the rails, should we mention the end of the first half a little bit, I think?
Yeah.
I think it wasn't ideal. I haven't seen that combination in maybe ever.
I think we had a football conversation that was along these lines where you're like, hey, do you want to bring up the thing? And we were like, yeah, don't do the thing. So I think we're in a similar spot. Don't do that.
Yeah, in general, do not intentionally foul someone when the other team is in the bonus and you're like 80 feet away from your basket. And don't throw the ball directly to the other team after the ensuing free throws.
I mean, the one thing that bothers me about that is that, so DDJ gets up a shot because they just leave him alone.
Yeah.
And then it's Winston and Teske at the basket. Teske goes up for the rebound, gets shoved in the back by Winston, no call. And then that, and it's just like,
I mean, it's one of those situations where, like, normally the refs just swallow their whistles on those type of possessions.
But then
Livers goes over and intentionally fouls the guy, and you can't swallow your whistle at that point.
Well, I mean, so there's a 17-2.
I'm not saying it's the greatest way to call it.
At one point in this game, and I think it's 24-7 before Tom Izzo eats his Livers time. Liver time. And, like, Michigan should not expect to get free throw parity with anybody.
Probably no, not. They play guards who are small and do not seek contact.
Right. So, like, but, like, and most of the free throws that Michigan State had were pretty legit, but there were three or four times in this game where I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Like, the
beginning part of the first half,
like
second half.
Travel possession on Winston where he then, like, initiates contact on Eli Brooks and gets a foul call.
The play where Winston got away with bumping the ball to a teammate after
that's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah, that's a double dribble is what that would have been.
And then there's like the shove off possession where like
which one?
Well, the the terribly obvious one.
I mean, in fairness, both these point guards are known to use the wing a little bit.
I mean, that's fine, and sometimes Michigan's going to get called for fouls and the other team's going to go to the line, but like there are just points in this game where, like, you know, Eli Brooks is getting a cut and he gets a shot up and Foster Lawyer is knocking him over and there's no call. And I'm like, if there's anybody in this league who deserves no respect on defense, it's Foster Lawyer.
Do you think you should get a foul called if Foster Lawyer knocks you over?
I mean, he's in the air. Even the little gnome can knock a guy over who's in the air.
They get tangled up in your legs.
You ever have a gnome thrown at you, Dave? It's not a pleasant situation.
Where have you been receiving gnome throws?
I don't want to talk about it. We should talk about Izzo's post-game press conference where he just liked
it. I still haven't devoured it yet.
It's so easy.
I think I need to light some candles first.
It's such classic Izzo where he's like, all credit to them. They deserve no credit.
He's got like his little Gollum voice that comes out.
Where he's like, I'm not going to blame my players. All of my players are terrible. I hate them. but for some reason they're going to stay.
We should have made more shots. They make shots they don't normally make.
Yeah, he's complaining about Simpson going 4-7 from three. One, you didn't have a guy within 15 feet of Simpson on any of those attempts.
Yeah, like you game plan to just let him take practice shots.
Two, he's a 36% three-point shooter this year.
Yeah, and on mostly looks that were harder than the ones that he was getting in this game.
Uh-huh. And teams...
Because State was, like, flying. Like, they were going so far under screens, they were ending up under the basket.
Or the Wagner assist, where there's, like, two guys on Teske in the restricted circle.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, early this year, Simpson comes out really hot from three. He's over 40%. He's, like, 42%. That's because people are not checking him at all. And then you have this kind of period in the middle of the season when...
He cools off considerably because teams are actually guarding him out
yeah.
there.
Yeah. So the way his shot is, it's kind of like Teske's shot, where if he gets any contest at all, it gets way, way worse.
Yeah.
And so...
Because he's still got that kind of slingshot right. delivery.
But he's clearly gotten to the point where you can't just tum-tum him. And
it's a good way of putting it.
There we go.
And like, I don't know, like, if you think he still shouldn't make the shot, maybe you need some more updated scouting, buddy. Maybe you need more updated scouting.
Yeah, and also, like, David DeJulius goes 2-for-7 from three on a bunch of good looks. Like,
well, so
those could level out pretty easily.
DeJulius also got stuck into two awful late clock.
That's
situations.
True. He had a couple chucks.
And one of Livers' threes was also a heave.
That's being kind.
Yeah, that was a literal heave.
Yeah, I mean, it's not Livers' fault.
No, I'm not blaming him. He just, I don't even know if he looked at the basket first.
Bad end of clock situation.
So, like, honestly, the efficiency of the guys is a little bit better than it seems because the shots that were actually reasonable shots went in at a little better rate.
Yeah. I mean, when you look at where teams were getting shots from in this game, like Michigan had, I would say, generally better shot quality from players, the players that you prefer to have taking shots.
Yeah. Because if you've got, you know, Bingham taking a three and you've got...
Or Tillman taking threes.
Yeah, those aren't quality shots usually. All right. First of many victories for Juwan Howard over Michigan State.
Here's to that.
Now we have to talk about the other game, which will be less fun.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online, it's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
You might be investing on your own or working with another advisor, but how would you grade your results? I'm Nick Hopwood, CFP founder and president,
Peak Wealth Management,
in Plymouth. For over 20 years, we've been working with institutional strategists, putting together low-cost portfolios which match your risk tolerance. If you have over $500,000 in your portfolio, you should consider a second opinion. You can connect with us online and schedule an appointment at peakwm.com.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages
$110,000.
It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout-out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within Alumni Online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Let's go. Turn it up. Introducing world famous beat junkie.
Sound and substance of the world's hottest entertainment.
So I cannot actually, well, I could, but I'm not going to say what I wrote down about the Ohio State game first off. It ends in flagrant and starts with two similar words that also start with F.
Yeah, I was about to say. I'm guessing there's some profanity in there.
Going on a limb there, are you, Ace?
We have to start with it because it's just...
Never seen anything like that
before. It determines the game. I have never, ever seen someone called for a flagrant foul after getting fouled and trying to brace themselves from falling from, like, being parallel to the ground, and 4 feet in the air.
The explanation is completely insane, where it's like he took him all the way to the ground, and the guy doesn't even...
go to the ground. His jersey got torn. That's what kept him from falling to the ground, probably. But, like, it does not inspire confidence in the officiating crew when their explanation for the foul is, like, patently untrue.
And this
after
came after...
just spent a long time looking at the play.
and this game was just probably the worst refereed game I've seen in years.
It was bad enough that, like, Jay Billis was harping on it almost from the tip. I would normally be annoyed by this.
I was a little annoyed because I thought, like, you know, through the first half, I thought there were a lot of guys, like, throwing themselves into contact and that no calls were fairly justified.
And then it just totally got away from
them. And then they just stopped calling anything.
Yeah.
And then everything they called was like, are you calling that? It was a complete debacle. No. And the thing that really bothered me is, so you have Caleb Wesson in this game, 152 OR rating, 36 minutes. And he should have fouled out of this game in 15 minutes. So he gets a ridiculous charge call when DDJ lands on him. And I don't care what happened before in this play. If you are in a position where someone is coming down from a jump and lands on you, that foul is on you. You cannot be set and have that happen. You can't take a charge when the guy is coming down.
Yeah, I mean, he slid under him.
Wisconsin's move.
They literally made a rule change that if you are in the air, that's when the guy has to be set.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, block charge calls, those are tough to call. And
not that one.
I mean, not that one, but like the ones that bothered me even more were the fact that he had two straight up hip checks that resulted in turnovers.
Both of them were egregious.
That's six fouls. And those are egregious fouls, the three that weren't called. And, I mean, the other one also erased an and one off the board. Because
yes,
DeJulius hit a tough floater and one that could have been useful at the end of the game.
Would have been nice.
And
also just there's a massive drop-off for Ohio State when Wesson comes off the floor.
Yeah.
Because their backup is E.J. Liddell.
So you let that guy just foul and foul and foul, and you let people bump cutters. And, I mean...
Yeah, there were cutters literally getting knocked to the floor in this game.
And, it's very strange because Billis is just, you're wondering if he's, like, changing your view of the game. And then you watch the replay and you're like, oh, my God. And there are points at this game where, like, Billis is ranting. He's like, the officiating has failed this year. And you can, like, hear the all caps in his voice. He's just livid. And you kind of get there too. So this is kind of like the Iowa game at Iowa, where you just doesn't seem like it's really a game. And this was at home.
Yeah,
Michigan got this whistle at home.
The whistle was bad both ways for much of the game.
It was.
They were letting a ton of contact go on both sides, but like then they made a call that decided the game.
I mean, they made multiple calls that decided the game in Ohio State's favor. And it's bad both ways. That's true. But to just straight up ignore a bunch of fouls on Caleb Wesson that would have put him out of the game.
Yeah, and this gets into both officiating issues and Chrysler Center things that we've talked about before. But yeah. It'd be really nice for like I don't remember the number of times that Michigan has lost games where it felt like the officiating played a direct hand versus the number of times that they've won games where it felt like they had a gift handed to them. I don't remember the last like, oh man, that was a gift game.
Yeah, I mean, part of that is just the way that Beeline teams have always played.
Absolutely.
Right? Where, like, they just don't go to the line very much.
But, like, there just isn't much in the, like, you know, it seems like every, like, last two-minute review
goes brutally against Michigan. Yeah, that Illinois game where it's clearly off Coburn, and they're like, no, inconclusive. And I'm like, all right, so Charles Matthews is conclusive, but that's not.
Yeah, that that's the stuff that drives me nuts.
All right. Well, moving on from the officiating.
To the shooting.
If we must.
I mean, this is another brick fest led by Franz, who has... We mentioned that Franz was very good not shooting against Michigan State. And in this game, same thing. He's 0-4 from 2 on 4 very good looks, 3 of which he created himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's 2 of 8 from 3, and I'm just like...
Ugh. Again, very good looks.
He's 14 rebounds, 3 of them on offense. He has a block and a steal.
He is so active, and he just needs
if
to
he can just
dial it in a little bit more.
Shoot the ball.
Then he's a star.
He was 38% on 150 attempts from the FIBA line last year, and he shot 90% on free throws. And just shoot the ball. I mean, Matt D pointed out that his form is off, so his elbow's cocked now. And I maybe that goes back to the wrist.
Yeah, I mean, there might be something that's a little bit off with it. But still, when he's taking a shot, it does not look bad. Like
until it gets the
until it gets there. But I mean, I hope it's something that he can fix over the course of the season. It might be something that
he
needs an
off-season thing at this point.
Yeah,
like in the MSU game, they mentioned that they had flown in his coaches from Germany to take a look.
Oh boy,
I was like, huh. So
that probably doesn't mean he's shooting awesome in practice.
Yeah, but he's got to keep doing it. I mean, there's no question that Franz Wagner to hit his ceiling has to be a ready and willing 3-point shooter.
Yeah, and even if he's not drilling threes, the 0-for-4 from 2 in this game on a bunch of quality looks, I don't think that is a technique and wrist injury thing.
Yeah.
No, because we've seen him finish those in other games with consistency.
No, I mean, the 0-for-4 for 2 is like you need to be able to finish the contact better. He took contact, he got good looks, he couldn't finish. He had some bad luck on a couple of them, but that's something I'm confident will get fixed.
And he's generally been like his 2-point percentage has held steady in Big Ten play.
Yeah, he's already a good 2-point finisher, and I think he'll get better. And it's just like, can he shoot threes like at a decent clip? Like,
well,
I don't know.
And we're still hanging out a little bit below decent right now.
Hopefully, with Livers back, he doesn't have to have as many of them, or he doesn't have to be, because like that's the guy that they're kind of running plays for, even though the end of the game was a good design for Eli, but Franz is the guy that they get a lot of open looks for.
I forgot about that.
That was a gorgeously drawn up play.
Yeah, so like
there was kind of just the summary of the game from Michigan's perspective.
I mean, people were complaining about, I think it was Billis was complaining about the fact that it took pretty much the whole clock, but you can't ask for better than a wide open look for Michigan's best
from the corner.
Yeah.
Well, as the clock is ticking down, especially when Simpson starts driving to the basket, I'm kind of like, all right, we don't have time for this. And then you see Eli slide from the wing to the corner, and Simpson kicks out, and you're like, okay, that's what they're going for. And you're like, maybe he could have shot it earlier so that you could play the foul game. But when you get a good look like that,
you're down three, that foul game is almost useless.
Is bleak, yeah.
Because
so,
you need
like,
to miss both.
If you have a shot to tie the game.
Right, and
I'm not really concerned that much about when it comes in the clock if you have that good a look.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
And it felt like the end of the Illinois game where, you know, you have Teske backing down Bishanishvili.
You get what you want. It doesn't work.
You get a 2-foot bunny that doesn't go down.
Yeah, and people, certainly not on the coach.
Yeah, and people were upset about, like, the lack of a 2-for-1 there, but I was just like, I think the stuff
they posted then reposted. I'll say it again.
The stuff that's gone on at the end of the game, I think, is actually really good. Like, the looks that they get in those situations are what you want.
And Michigan, I think I have these numbers somewhere. Michigan has been one of the better teams in the country after timeouts. So
that must be a synergy thing.
Yeah, I'm attempting to pull it up, but right. I did not have the window that I
thought. Is that, like, even just getting the ball in? Because that seems to be an issue from time to time.
It's always an issue from time to time. But
that happens to most teams. But Michigan does not have, like, an elevated turnover rate on after timeout plays or anything. Like, okay. It is, let's see, Michigan is 96th percentile in short shot clock plays, which usually means that you're doing some excellent stuff, and they're 79th percentile after timeouts.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's good coaching. Questionable coaching. Drop coverage on Caleb Wesson.
Yeah, he's a better three-point shooter than Xavier Tillman.
So he starts off 3 or 4 from three on looks that were Simpson against Michigan State quality looks. I kind of wonder if that wasn't actually the game plan, because you have Teske coming out for these, like, really late contests, and I wonder if he just wasn't executing what he was supposed to. But then
it seemed like it was kind of a combination of the coverage and poor execution.
But his stuff from two that people are putting on Teske is not on Teske. So he hits two tough fadeaways. He has a couple buckets against Austin Davis. He has a putback.
Yeah, there were people calling for Davis to start over Teske after this game and get more minutes, and I'm trying not to be mean to people.
That's crazy, but
we can give him some props.
Teske had some extremely disappointing possessions on offense.
Oh, absolutely. He had bad moments. I just like, and Davis was legitimately good on offense in this game.
What a world, man.
Yeah, goes four for four on two. Has, like, I mean, a lot of this was because of the way that Ohio State was defending pick and rolls, but he does have, like, a nice finish in there. He goes 3 for 3 from the line, which is unusual for him.
He's catching the ball, like, previous years. I don't know if he spent the entire offseason with, like, a basketball jugs machine. Does that exist?
I wonder if
Davis spent the offseason with it.
It's called a student manager.
Okay.
I mean, yeah.
Let's work on chest passes.
Yeah, I mean, he caught the ball well in this game. He had a left-handed catch and finish against Michigan State that we didn't mention. That was
he also stopped
wild.
Caleb Wesson on that three-pointer. Like, they ISO'd Caleb Wesson against him at the end of the game. He got into the lane, and Davis bodied him up. And I think that's when Eli reached down, and the kickout came, and the guy made the shot. Yeah. But, I mean, they played Teske and Davis together, and still had Davis on Caleb Wesson, which the first time I think he got a bucket, and I was a little like, okay, that's interesting. And the second time they bodied him up again, and I was like, then he stoned him in the lane.
I think the matchup there is better for Davis because Wesson isn't super tall. He's not that athletic.
And he's not as burly as he used to be, so he can't overpower like he used to.
And then I think that was because Michigan had problems with the drop coverage early in the game because Kyle Young's out there, and so they had put Teske on Kyle Young, and you can float off Kyle Young. So Teske's just able to camp in the lane, and then you're able to be a lot more aggressive on Wesson on the perimeter because you still have lane protection. So that's why I thought we saw the two bigs. Like, people get the two big stuff, and they're like, I kind of hate this. It doesn't feel like modern basketball, and I get that, but I also think that every time Michigan has done it, they've had a pretty decent reason.
Well, especially when Livers is out. So few options. And in this game, also, Brandon Johns has 4 fouls.
Right.
Yeah, he's in foul trouble, and Caleb Wesson isn't.
So you're just extremely limited as to, like, who you can actually
Brandon
put
Johns
on the
floor. Is literally the only player with significant foul trouble in the entire game.
Well, of course, because they're not calling it anything.
Interesting.
Games of Chrysler.
This is the Craig Ross podcast.
And this was another game where X's usage got kind of amped up. He was 3-7 from 3, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just 2-7 from 2, and he only had 5 assists to 4 turnovers. So kind of too much on his plate game, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah.
Also, it's hard to have assists when you're playing football.
You go 10 for 31 from 3.
Yeah.
And Livers isn't one of the shooters.
Well, and the other thing is like, all those looks in the first half where it's just like, that's a good shot, that's a good shot, that's a good shot. And
yep.
It's especially hard to have assists when out of the 10 3-pointers that your team made, you made 3 of them yourself.
That's true. And you have Eli going 2 of 8 on mostly great looks. You have Wagner going 2 of 8, mostly great looks. Teske goes 0 of 3.
You know.
Hey, it's not, it's
maybe
not
you're
one of six.
To make one of those.
It's not one of six, which we've seen a few times.
But this was like peak. This season is cursed with everything that happened.
Make or miss game.
Make or miss game with the officiating being, first of all, completely absurd, and then pretty much directly giving Ohio State the win with an absurd call. Like,
yeah, I mean, that swung.
Not great, Bob.
Yeah. Goes from Michigan potentially being up three and going on defense, even though Simpson splits the free throws, but then that gets canceled out by Ohio State and they get the ball. And
no, so Simpson, they both hit both the free throws on the...
Oh, right. Yeah, their free throws canceled out as well.
Yeah, the free throws canceled out, so Ohio State's still up one.
And then Ohio State gets the ball.
Yeah.
But it just, it's, yeah, it was bad.
It was very bad.
It was very bad.
Very, very bad.
Recently, Seth and I were having lunch, and he asked me what someone in their 30s married with children should be doing with their finances. I rattled off some gibberish, and then he said, that's what your next ad should be. So, here we go. Hey, it's Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. I'm a certified financial planner, founder, and president at
Peak Wealth Management.
And it would be smart for you to start paying close attention at this point. I think you would want to consider the following. Max out your 401k. I like the Roth 401k, as long as your income is under $415,000 per year. Max out your Roth IRA. Set up your mortgage on a 15-year amortization. Add $500 a month for each kid's 529. Invest with the appropriate risk tolerance. Make sure you have enough life insurance to cover debts, education, and income replacement. Don't take out any credit card debt. Pay all your bills each month. Make sure you have an emergency fund. And if your needs are any more complicated than that, connect with us at peakwm.com to book an appointment.
Peak Wealth Management.
Retire with confidence.
It can be a rough ride along the information superhighway. That's why we build our e-commerce websites tough enough to handle the load. With the capacity to take hundreds of simultaneous online transactions and the stability of load-balanced co-located server architectures, a website from Human Element performs in the roughest conditions. Thousands of products? No problem. We'll throw in the tools to manage it with precision and efficiency. All with a design slick enough to make you think your girlfriend might be impressed. So load it up and hit the gas and let Human Element show you the way. Special offers available for returning lessees. Financing available with approved credit to qualified buyers. Client participation may affect savings. Optional equipment available at additional cost. See human-element.com for details.
If you get in foul trouble in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man on your bench. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go! Let's go!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics within alumni online communities. It's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Are you planning a business trip, a Michigan reunion, or a revenge tour in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94? Look no further than the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown. Positioned at the corner of Huron and Ashley, the hotel is just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium and Central Campus with all the amenities you expect. Also, we podcast here most Sunday mornings, so if you let us know you're coming, we'll let you put a shout out on the pod. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
Cheesing on the sleigh and bleeding in the rain. time it is, Dave? Do you know what time it is? Ace, it's time for you to summon your fiery tanks. You need to act like Tom Izzo when he doesn't get a call. Can you do that for me?
I mean, there's not a court to wander on, so that's going to make it tough.
Oh, okay.
Do you
okay.
think they're...
Are you being a pretty, pretty princess about the Fuego Box hot take section?
Do you think there are people that maybe have rooms above us that every once in a while like hear this voice emulates from somewhere?
It's like noon on a Sunday. This is an empty
Someone's
hotel.
Got like a weekly meeting. Like.
What is happening?
In another one of the conference rooms that hasn't been destroyed by Rutgers basketball renaissance.
Oh, my God.
Oh.
We have to switch that to Northwestern.
They think like the hotel stat. Is haunted.
Yeah.
By a very strange person.
Which kind of true. All right. All right. Every Sunday.
Please give me your hottest take.
Michigan State should promote their entire offensive coaching staff to co-head coach. What could go wrong?
That's really, really good.
I mean, honestly, if they don't get Fickell, what are they going to do?
They're basically going to do that. They're probably going to go in the defense special teams direction with Mike Tressel.
Yeah.
I got his first name right.
That would be amazing. Interim Mike Tressel. Recruiting class will probably still be better than this one, though. Huh? Huh?
But think of the power of like six or seven head coaches. How many guys do they have on their offensive staff? Like five or six? Like it's six head coaches.
That seems like your hot take.
Why would it be my hot take?
No, their recruiting class will be better.
Oh, might be.
It's hard for it to get worse.
Hard for it to get worse. All right. Dave!
I need your hottest take.
The XFL might actually finish a season.
People were talking about the XFL. It was strange.
From what I could tell, it actually looked like kind of I didn't watch because there was college basketball.
Yeah, I did. The same situation.
But it did seem kind of interesting. Like people enjoyed the kickoff stuff, which, hey, called that on a hot take.
So, the interesting thing is you can now interview players after drives?
Yeah, I saw a tweet.
So
a
kicker misses a field goal, and he walks off the field and has to talk about it.
Well, that sucks that guy, but right. That is wildly entertaining.
Cardale Jones was interviewed after drives when he fumbled an exchange.
This is something I would tune in to watch. I'm not going to lie. Like, I'll probably watch some XFL today.
Also, you can go for three after a touchdown.
What's going for three?
So going for one is from about the two or two.
There
and a half.
Aren't any kicked extra points.
Right. So it's like full flag football where you can go for one from about 2.5 out,
okay.
Going for two from 5, and going for three from 10.
Huh.
So you can be down 9 late in the game and be like, it's a one-score game.
And also, they also have rules designed to encourage you to go for it on fourth down. Like, I think
right.
touchbacks on punts bring it out to the 35.
Touchbacks and if the ball goes out of bounds.
Yeah, you can't cough in corner.
So, and there's another one where I'm trying to remember what
Kirk
it is.
Ferentz is just burning.
Oh, if the kickoff doesn't make the 20-yard line, then you get the ball at the plus 45.
What do you mean if the kickoff doesn't make it?
So if you kick the ball off and it doesn't
Because you have
make
those guys lined up super
right.
far down the field.
Oh.
If it doesn't get to the 20-yard line, like if it drops at the 23 and just dies or doesn't bounce inside the 20, then the receiving team gets the ball at the plus 45.
They're really trying to make returns happen and make going for it happen. And
yeah, they're trying to take these like things that people are kind of like slodginess out of.
Slodgy, that's a good word.
Out of football. So, you know, is it kind of Wild West in a way? Well, sure, but there are some interesting things that, like for example, the old XFL, the one thing that stuck around was Skycam. That was the first time it was used. And
Wow.
And
there was some innovation.
So there's enough things here. They're also doing different things with the clock. Like it runs on incompletions and out of bounds, except in the last 2 minutes. Mm-hmm. And
they're trying to make games go faster.
Exactly.
That makes them go faster, but doesn't like make them go faster.
I think they're
10-minute
basically.
Halftime.
I think they've kind of set the rules up where you sort of have to run a hurry up-ish offense.
Yeah, there's only 25 seconds, and the ball starts when they also have an eighth official who spots the ball. His only job, so he's running around the field with like this big bag around him with footballs in it.
That's awesome. And, also, and all how much does that job pay?
All he has to do is like find the ball or get the one and put it down, and none of the other refs have to like run in and then like spot it and then get back to their position. So I mean, like, there's some things like that.
It's just like super ball boy.
Coaches are mic'd up when they're live, like when they're calling plays.
Oh yeah, like I saw people tweeting about like, why can't I hear the coordinator? I'm like, why should you not? That sounds amazing.
So I was watching with Craig, and we had a whatever game. I think he wanted to rewatch the basketball game, obviously. And so we had it on the second TV that was muted.
So when he says he rewatches a basketball game in slow motion, does he really watch the whole game?
He watches it at half speed.
He watches it at half
speed. I mean, not the commercials.
Sure.
And not the timeouts, but yeah.
That's crazy.
That is crazy.
But my point is that we had the XFL game muted, and I was like, all right, I'll just turn it off so we can watch. And then I was kind of like, oh, we're kind of missing half of this, because they're now talking to Cardale Jones after he fumbled in exchange with a running back.
Well, I saw a tweet where some guy got hit with a personal foul and came off the field, and they interviewed him.
and he
dropped an F-bomb.
Perfect!
And Jeff Schwartz, who's a great follow for that sort of thing, is like, yeah, maybe you don't interview the lineman after he gets in a fight.
No, you definitely do.
You do.
You do. This makes me want to have like an XHL so I can finally have hockey with no offsides.
This makes me think that David Moult came along like 10 years too early.
Yeah. No offsides would be so amazing. So I thought
of... I bet you talked about that with Craig yesterday.
But this is like
I thought of a modification that I think might even make it acceptable to like old heads, where you bring back the two-line pass, but just for...
Oh, we're now fully on the XHL.
Yeah, we're on the XHL.
You knew this was coming, Ace.
So they got rid of the two-line pass for the red line, but the two-line pass still exists for the two blue lines. Mm-hmm. So I think you should be able to pass from your defensive zone to across the red line, but you shouldn't be able to pass from before the red line into the offensive zone. And then you can get rid of offsides entirely.
Okay.
Interesting.
XHL, baby. Is that my hot take?
Is that your hot take? I think it should be your hot take.
Oh, wow. We have finished a segment.
You were going to say something.
I was gonna, like, one of the main things that usually these leagues fail. Yes. The one that has worked best was the one that just got like absorbed into the NFL. And that happened pre-Super Bowl.
50 years ago.
The main contribution is usually advancements in the game or Skycam, stuff like that.
Yeah,
or advancements in coverage.
Yeah.
And it also seems like the XFL is better set up for success than any of the leagues before it, because they have like a national TV deal, which the AAF. To be on ESPN and Fox is a nice start instead of CBS Sportsnet.
Yeah.
They didn't rush it out. So these teams actually look like they've practiced together.
Yeah.
And so there's also a Team 9, which is like fully functioning in Dallas, that if a team needs a player, they can go to Team 9 and pull them off. So these guys have been like playing together and like staying in shape and all this stuff. And it's sort of
so it's like a league-wide practice squad, basically.
Yeah, huh.
Interesting.
And they have like coaches who've done things before. Like Bob Stoops is a coach. Pep Hamilton is a coach. I mean, you have guys that are.
We can also follow along with fun things like Connor Cook being a first-round draft pick and then losing the starting competition.
Can we stop talking about the XFL?
I don't know.
This
is a pretty good segment. Oh, we might have this might be our fourth segment for the next few weeks.
We got to get to my hot take, which
we already had.
Well, I got lots.
You have two.
I got lots.
That's true.
All right.
Michigan has a better tourney resume than Michigan State.
That is hot.
I mean, if you look at the quad one wins, Michigan has 6. They have 8 losses.
Okay. Yeah.
But, you know, Michigan State, they're only a game better in the win column. And, you know, they beat Seton Hall, which is their big win in the non-conference. Michigan has Creighton, which is a pretty good team.
It's coming back around. Yeah. That has gone up and down as the season.
Well, they're headed towards an at-large bid.
Yeah.
They've beaten Gonzaga, you know.
I think that's the
one seed.
Only team to beat Gonzaga.
And so they go 1-1 against Michigan. Their wins in conference are Rutgers at home. Michigan has Rutgers neutral. Illinois, okay, we don't have that one. Minnesota, all right, we don't have that one. Wisconsin,
Well, Michigan still has a chance to play Wisconsin.
Minnesota again, and Northwestern. And Michigan, you know, they have the Creighton. The Creighton's 25th in KenPom now.
Creighton's a solid team.
They have a win over Iowa. They have a win over Purdue. I mean.
Oh, man, that Purdue game.
And then if the committee takes into account the fact that they didn't have Isaiah Livers for
That's the factor that I think best supports your argument.
But, I mean, more quad one wins.
But they still have some games that they can win down the stretch with Livers that you can then show, hey, look what we did with him versus when he was gone for a few weeks.
Yeah, they have a lot of, like, toss-up lean loss game, toss-up or lean loss games down the stretch where...
And now you're feeling a little bit better about those games because the KenPom ranking has 10 games and no Livers, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of no Livers baked in.
But it's pretty close.
Is there
Michigan State is ahead of Michigan and wins above bubble.
Okay.
On the season.
By how much?
They have 2.3. Michigan's at 1.6. That's good for six spots nationally. So it's relatively close.
It's pretty close.
Is there a team in the Big Ten that you look at and be like, oh, Michigan can't play with them or beat them?
With Livers...
Nah.
No.
So the only team that I don't know about, because I haven't really seen as enough of, or Michigan hasn't played, is Maryland.
Maryland, yeah.
But everybody else, you're like, no, I've watched enough of that team or Michigan playing against them. I'm like, some shots fall. Like, why can't Michigan knock them off?
Maryland's good. Anthony Cowan has been really awesome. And they have a very stout defense.
They're pretty good.
Their game against Illinois was a very high-level basketball game. Which is a wild thing to say.
Well, we're all on Team Underwood here. Come on.
That's true. That's true. But I don't think we had a lot of Team Turgeon.
Do you?
I've been talking to Maryland since before the season, so I'm okay with where I'm sitting right now. But
Brian, you've had two hot takes. Do you have any more you need to get off your chest?
Is this for me to talk about Fuego Box? Or
yes.
Okay. So, for some reason, Fuego Box pays us to do this, so why don't you support them by going to fuegobox.com/mgoblog and signing up for the featured all-star crate, which is 10% off. You will get 3 hot sauces per month. These are not merely fiery, fiery, fiery hot sauces. They focus on flavor. So spice up your takes, just like Dave spiced up his takes a little bit. Yeah. Good job, Dave.
Thanks, Brian.
Speaking of good jobs, sort of.
Not really.
Not really.
Nah.
This is a good job.
Michigan State, their head coach got run by Curtis Blackwell.
Yeah.
I think this is really what happened. Because you'd have to be crazy if you're Michigan State not to just give D'Antonio his money early if he wants to retire. And after the season, he's talking about completing the circle and all this stuff. Like, he's coming back, and everybody's like, okay, I guess we're resigned to that. And now this Curtis Blackwell stuff comes out where he's got...
He's laid out, he's like detailed recruiting violations.
Yeah. Who retires at this point in the year?
Well, when you have a $4.5 million retention bonus that kicks in mid-January...
Yeah, but like if D'Antonio...
You at least stick around until then.
If D'Antonio had come to Beekman and is like, I'm out, give me my money...
They probably would have just...
I mean, it would just make sense, right? Because he can... wait for his money and then bolt and then screw you over, or you can give him his money now and then you can actually participate in the coaching carousel when everybody should.
Yeah, and they put Beekman in that job specifically to say yes to Tom Izzo and Mark D'Antonio. So,
but given the context of everything, what isn't Michigan State going to do for Mark D'Antonio?
Yeah, what I'm saying is, like, if D'Antonio was really going to retire...
No, I know.
But yeah, he retired hours after the report came out about Blackwell.
And he may have been on the fence and decided he was going to, like, stick it out for another year. And then this Blackwell stuff came out, and he was like, I'm tired. I don't know why he's Southern all of a sudden. From Texas. Is that Texas? I don't know.
There are rumors that he was going to go to South Carolina at one point.
Yeah, that's true. So I think he really got run by Blackwell. And then Tom Mars, like, pops on the case, and I'm like...
Yeah, it's getting interesting.
I wonder if there's, like, a Michigan Peter Thiel out there. And, like,
I hope not.
Well, let's not
use Peter Thiel as an example.
Is it Thiel?
Yeah.
All right. So, obviously, Peter Thiel is not a good dude. And
what happened to Deadspin is a travesty.
Well, that's not his... Well, it's indirectly his fault. But the context here is, like, okay, I'm mad because someone said I was gay 10 years ago versus, I don't know, we could destroy Michigan State's amoral football program.
Like, yeah.
One of these is a laudable goal.
Yeah.
So if Blackwell is having this go through the whole process because it makes sense.
Well, I think for Blackwell, he's got to do that because right now what I mean, MSU has put on him will make him unemployable, at least in college football.
Yeah, like if his name does get cleared by this lawsuit, Michigan should absolutely hire him.
It'd be an interesting move.
if his name gets cleared.
That is an important thing, is as long as he was not responsible.
Yeah, if he is able to prove
covering up a sexual
in assault. In a court of law that he was a scapegoat and he did not do anything untoward, then Michigan should absolutely hire him. it would be good.
It would be very popular among in-state recruits.
So where is Michigan State going then?
Well, they pulled the...
they got a lot of preemptive no's, which is hilarious.
They pulled the Jim McElwain. I guess it's pulling that Jeremy Foley.
I think it's McElwain. But we enjoy this.
They pulled the Jeremy Foley. So they just flew their plane to Cincinnati. And all the reporters are like, here's the athletic director getting off the plane, which is like Jeremy Foley sitting in McElwain's living room.
Yeah.
And they had to close the blinds because reporters were taking photographs through the windows. Like, the least covert search in history.
And they've already figured out where the plane's going to next.
It's
going to fly to Happy Valley, presumably to interview Brent Pry, because I can't imagine. I mean, they're not plucking James Franklin, so.
It's Cincinnati. Get in a car.
It's 4 hours.
Or just don't take the freaking team plane.
Get in a car.
Does it need to be covert?
It always helps.
You know, Cincinnati's practically in Kentucky, so I can't understand.
I have driven from Michigan to Bowling Green, Kentucky many, many times. Cincinnati isn't that far away.
It's not that far.
4 hours.
It's 4 hours. Five-ish.
Yeah.
Get in the car. Your time isn't that valuable, Bill Beekman.
Take the team bus.
I'm imagining...
No, don't take the team bus. Take a car. Take, a Chevy Impala. I mean...
I'm picturing Bill Beekman in a Flintstones car,
going really fast.
Get it started, literally with his feet on the ground.
So now you have no plausible deniability when Luke Fickell
says no, which seems like a distinct possibility.
Well, so the situation at Michigan State is you have probably the most toxic public relations of any university in the country, deservedly.
Yes,
you're going to be replacing the best coach in the last 50 years.
Who has left behind an absolute recruiting crater.
Who's left behind an absolute recruiting crater. Your quarterback the first year is probably going to be Rocky Lombardi.
Theo Day.
Or possibly someone from the portal, which is probably the most likely outcome.
That would be smart of them.
But the portal is closing.
And that's one of the things that
this timing is bad.
The timing is incredibly bad for Michigan State.
I mean, maybe they can get in on a guy who transfers after spring practice because he loses a job.
Yeah.
But then you also don't have that guy in for spring practice.
Right. So it's so you're probably going to be eating a 4-8 first year. And
they have an interesting schedule.
And if you're Luke Fickell right now, you're looking at I can dominate the American Conference and wait for a better job to open up.
Yeah, because they're projecting that they're going to be a top 20 team next year.
Or you can go to the Big Ten East, where you are currently looking up at least three teams. And probably more, because I don't think MSU is going to be as good as Indiana or maybe even Maryland next year. That roster is losing a lot and not adding much at all.
No.
And they're also losing transfers.
And their non-con is at BYU, Toledo, and the Miami Hurricanes.
Not the best year to have a tough non-conference schedule, but I am here for it.
They also go to Kinnick, and they host Minnesota.
I mean, they're probably not going to have
Kinnick? Probably not Knight Kinnick.
I don't think they would waste a Knight Kinnick on that.
No.
You don't need that. Yeah.
No. So, I mean, it really is. It looks like a death trap job. And, if you're Luke Fickell, I think the move is to wait for something better.
Yeah. I mean, Pat Narduzzi, who I thought was maybe more likely to bolt because he's not a guy who's going to get a top tier job.
No.
He preemptively, he put out a
Wolf of Wall Street Photoshop.
Yeah, I'm staying, guys.
But who does he have to beat in his division to win his division?
I mean, that's the difference. It's Pitt and Michigan State are basically on level footing right now in terms of the quality of their football teams, and one of them has a way easier path to getting into a good bowl game.
Yeah.
Or even, winning six games.
And, the fan situation in Pittsburgh is terrible, and it's always terrible. But, I mean, if you look at the attendance at Michigan State, even when they were good, that is a terrible fan base. They don't show up. They don't turn out for anything except the Michigan game.
I mean, I think it certainly says something that Narduzzi, who is beloved there still, didn't even think about it, really. No. And they also got, I think Matt Campbell gave him a pretty hard preemptive no. That was going to be, I mean.
Like Matt Campbell's going to turn all down all the places he's already turned down and be like, Michigan State.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy they have to poke around, but it says something about Michigan State that Iowa State's head coach is immediately like, no, I'm not even thinking about it. Like, you got to be kidding me.
I'm in Ames, baby.
So they might be trying to hire like Penn State's defensive coordinator who's never been a head coach.
So they're in that position where they have to take a guy who's not proven at all.
I mean, they've had coordinators turn him down.
Well, didn't they ask
who else
the 49ers defense coordinator?
Oh.
Salah.
Yikes.
Yeah.
I mean, to be fair,
like, not he has an interview.
I mean,
he has a good defense, and their team has a
They did just make the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And they have some unfinished business, which is, I think, one of the reasons he cited for not taking the Michigan State job. But also, like, man, prominent college head coaching position versus coordinator job in the NFL.
Prominent?
It's prominent. I didn't say good. I said prominent.
Fair enough.
They make a lot of ESPN
Much disgust.
Much disgust is
that's where we're gonna leave that for now. But yeah, I mean they're in a rough spot. If Fickell turns them down, and even if Fickell takes it, it's going to be tough to dig out of the hole that D'Antonio left them in.
So it really comes down to Fickell. Do you want the Michigan State job? Like, not. Yeah, obviously that's the question, but. Is this kind of like, all right, this is where I want to go and probably stay for a while because what you're getting into.
I mean, if you get to stay for a while.
And that's why I don't think you take it, is there's not a lot of security there. It doesn't have have the upside.
And also, like, their fan expectations have been altered.
Yes.
Inflated.
If you go 7-6 there, which is probably their baseline expectation, they're not going to be happy.
Meanwhile, Fickell's two dream jobs are Ohio State and Notre Dame, and I don't really see a path at Michigan State for him to use that as a stepping stone to one of those jobs.
Nah, I mean, you could get in the Big Ten West and pull the P.J. Fleck.
Yeah, but in the East, it's just you're going to get kind of stuck in the middle, I think. And meanwhile, how much longer is Brian Kelly going to be at Notre Dame?
Kind of feels like that's a marriage that will break up fairly soon, as soon as like it's convenient for either party, probably.
Which is weird because he won 11 games last year and he went to the playoff in 12, winning 12 games the year before.
But he's also Brian Kelly.
Well,
everybody
and
hates
that's
him. It's so weird.
That's the point. You're expecting rationality from Notre Dame fans.
I mean, I'm not. It's just like, you know, if I think one more bad year, like if he has an off year and they go 7-6 or
they're
whatever,
they're just tired of him.
But that, I don't think that's going to happen. I mean, I think there's.
Are we sure?
I don't know. I mean, you look at their schedule and then you look at kind of who they have, and they have enough talent. They're still sending guys.
That's
in the
always
NFL.
The case. I mean, with Notre Dame, it's just like.
Yeah, I mean, he's
did built, they bring it this year or not?
He's built a good enough program. He's kind of the worst. They're kind of in the same spot Michigan is, right? Where it's just like, yeah, he's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, but I mean, he's won a few more games, I think.
He has.
Except for the 1 year.
But, you know, when you have, like, the guy who's, he's pretty good, and it's gone on for, like, a decade, as soon as there's,
Notre Dame.
As soon as there's a hiccup, it's like, all right, well, maybe we're going to do something else.
And they've already had, like, a hiccup. So once you get, like, the second hiccup at Notre Dame.
And then you're going to be like, let's give Luke Fickell a role.
If Fickell has put together, like, a bunch of double-digit win seasons at Cincinnati, I think.
I mean, that's kind of what Kelly
I don't think that's a bad hire.
That's kind of what Kelly did?
Yeah. I mean, that was his path.
That's true.
Basically what he did.
Well.
Skipped the Central Michigan part and the Grand Valley bit.
And the only thing that's kind of a bummer is if they don't get Fickell, like, the obvious thing to do is probably to hire Chris Creighton. And Creighton's in a position where he's, like, going to take that job.
But instead, they're flying to Happy Valley.
That's
so maybe they're not smart enough to do that.
How would it be if Michigan State, like, showed up in Ypsilanti and is like, this is where we need to find
I'm going to have to start, like, standing watch out
do
there.
Do they have, like...
Far from the Ypsilanti football facilities.
Don't you think they have too much pride to do that?
What? No,
Why would they have too much pride to hire a guy who has been, like, the only successful coach at Eastern Michigan for generations?
You're right, but that would involve going to Eastern to actually make that hire. And I don't know. Can you go in-state and grab a guy
at a lesser program than you?
I don't think that's a...
You don't think so?
No,
I'm not saying...
Mentioned for like... if you listen to like podcast ain't played nobody, which is like all about coaching searches all the time, like he gets brought up a lot.
Sure.
A guy who should be up for good jobs.
I'm not saying that it wouldn't be a good move. I'm saying that it might. Michigan State seems to have a lot of pride in certain areas, and going to Ypsilanti to get their coach might not.
Ypsilanti.
Yeah.
I'm not from here. I don't know.
You live in Ann Arbor.
I do.
It's the next
here.
Town over.
Ypsilanti sounds all like right. a dessert.
Just call it Ipsy.
I would like some Ypsilanti with my Dolce.
It's just like the most un-Ipsy thing.
Yes.
But anyway, I'll be standing watch outside the Ipsy football facilities making sure that no Spartans hire Chris Creighton.
Well, I mean, because if they offer...
when Chevy Impalas pull up, you'll be like...
Chris Creighton's making like $70 a year with some free soup, so like he'll take the job, right?
Yeah, they're paying him in like team clothing.
Yeah. You gotta sell
Do you
them.
Want another gray pullover?
He takes the logos off and sells it on eBay.
I was about to say that he's hawking.
Look at this Under Armour thing with some random stitching.
What are those holes?
EMU is a failing university, and it's not actually that funny.
yeah, no, you are correct about that. But also, Eastern Michigan's program, much less failing than it had been.
They sure. won at Illinois this year.
Which was more impressive than we made it out to be initially.
That's true. That is true. Do we have any other...
Mark D'Antonio thoughts?
Yeah. Good riddance.
Good riddance to bad rubbish, but also like it sucks to see him go when Michigan was about to just ream him for the next several years. That might happen anyway.
I was really looking forward to him on the sideline in next year's game.
Mark D'Antonio come out of retirement.
That wasn't a hot take. That was 100% accurate.
It was totally accurate. We needed that to happen.
We needed Harbaugh just say incredibly personal, inappropriate things about Mark D'Antonio, about his family. Just make it a blood war. So he would have come.
But if he trashed him on the scoreboard next year in East Lansing, what would D'Antonio have had to lose by taking him on?
What, like in a fight?
Yeah, like instead of a handshake, he just kind of like grapples him.
That would be amazing!
Incredible! And that has almost happened with Harbaugh before in a post-game handshake, so this is not remotely outside the realm of possibility.
Can you imagine this? Jim Harbaugh, after beating the brakes off Michigan State 44-10, gets super personal in a press conference.
Mark D'Antonio, your mother says you suck!
Like... and then beats the brakes off of him, and he's Lansing. And the hand, we just, this is almost as bad as not having Caris LeVert in 2016. Mm. this it would have been amazing. And I thought we might have gotten it. And then he pulled the ripcord.
Maybe he knew that's how it ended and just couldn't stomach it.
Maybe.
Maybe Mark D'Antonio listens to the MCO podcast. No, probably not.
Probably not.
I think this was our longest segment of the day. That should tell you something about the MCO blog.
Well, it tells you something is that we greatly respect the products of Fuego Box and give their segment a lot of time.
Absolutely.
But now let's take another commercial break and we'll be back to talk some hockey.
This is Matt Demrest, the owner of Homeshore Lending. We're a local mortgage company here to help you purchase with confidence and refinance with ease. People don't get mortgages very often, so it can be confusing. We'll break down every single line item so that it all makes sense. And at the end of the day, if we're not giving you the best deal, we'll tell you to go with the other company. We're here to offer our simple mortgage guidance.
This is Seth Fisher from MGO Blog. Over the years, we've sent dozens of readers to use Homeshore Lending, and every review that's come back has been raving. I myself used them to refinance after doing our original loan through our bank. I was amazed how much smoother the process was for our company. Complicated loan. Brian used them, you should use them too.
Finding out whether it makes sense or not to refinance or getting pre-approved to buy a new home is easy. Head over to homeshorelending.com. That's HOMESURE lending.com/MGOBlog to find out more. Or call us at 734-531-9950. That's 734-531-9950. I've got two of my favorite people here with me. Kind of an annual tradition. Cooper and Colby. Cooper, how old are you?
11.
Colby, how about you?
9.
Can I get a Go Blue?
Go Blue!
NMLS number 1161358, Equal Housing Lender.
The University of Michigan was the place we all came together. It's where we pursued our curiosities and where we rallied around things that really mattered. The Alumni Association has now made it possible for you to reconnect with your fellow Wolverines around endless topics. Within Alumni Online Communities, it's where you can join in the discussion or start your own on any subject from your career, identity, hobbies, or interests. Go to umalumni.com/communities and keep the conversation going.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
Here's a thing people say. Seth, tell me about your insurance.
I'm actually glad you asked me about that because I just changed my insurance and I'm really happy I did.
Let me guess, you use Phil Klein and Owen Rosen of the Phil Klein Insurance Group.
They are MGO blog readers and they don't advertise during football games.
And they've got a 5-star rating on anything you would care to see. Call Owen at 248-682-7445 or visit them online at philklineinsurance.com.
Say, do you like clickbait? Do you like articles that take about 5 minutes and zero knowledge to write? Well, you listen to this podcast and you probably read MGO Blog, which means you don't, and it's probably time to get that Athletic subscription. I'm going to get you 40% off. Just listen in. The Athletic is a subscription-based sports news site delivering in-depth sports coverage for diehard fans. You read exclusive stories on Michigan football by Nick Baumgartner and Austin Meek, Michigan basketball by Brendan Quinn, national stories from writers you know like Bruce Feldman, Stuart Mandel, and Seth Davis. There's no ads, no pop-ups, no clickbait. The Athletic is setting a new standard for sports news coverage. You can join today for Wolverines content you won't find anywhere else and get 40% off your annual subscription by going to theathletic.com/mgoblog. Again, that's athletic.com/mgoblog.
Aces Hockey Podcast. Aces actually left. So
he is gone.
So the joke isn't quite as funny anymore.
Wait till you hear his outro.
It's true. It was good. Anyway.
But listen to this segment first.
Yes, please. Michigan sweeps Wisconsin. Gets approximately no closer to the NCAA tournament. They're 26th and
25th
in pairwise still. But they did need to win both of these games against the worst team in the Big Ten. And it turns out the worst team in the Big Ten is 70% of their problem is that their goaltending is horrendous.
Their defense is not a lot better, but their goaltending is.
How many super soft goals were there this weekend?
You said like five. Like I can remember at least three or four. But I'll tell you what, on Friday when they had eight, I probably cannot recall every single goal that now has gone in. I think Michigan got a couple of like nice bounces too. I know Becker had like a redirect and stuff like that, but. Eight was like it was starting to approach. Do you remember the 10-6 game in Columbus?
Yes,
where it was basically goaltending is optional.
Yeah,
it was. I mean, they were three quarters of the way there.
Well, the thing about all of Wisconsin goals is they were like slam dunks into an empty net that man had basically no chance on.
Yeah, I mean that happened all weekend.
But like, so their offensive talent is off the charts. Caulfield
has turned most of Michigan's individual defenders into pretzels at some point.
I mean, you can really tell which guy is like the guy.
And they didn't have Turcotte all weekend, who was another first round pick.
Yeah, and then they have Holloway, who's going to go in the first round this year.
And they have a defenseman who was a first round pick 2 years ago.
Yeah. So, I mean, they have more talent than anybody in the league, but when you have 890 goaltending, and I don't think that 890 goaltending has a lot to do with their defense. Like, they're not great, but like,
but that's even worse.
But yeah, the kind of stuff that this guy was letting in was terrible. It was so bad that, you know, those like interviews they do between periods at Yost?
Yeah.
That are essentially like they're the most repetitive things in the world. They're basically like the Rasheed Wallace, both teams played hard press conference, except they're not trying to do it. They're just like, we gotta get some pucks at the net. All right, thank you.
I mean, I think I tweeted that, and I also may have even written that in one of the breakdowns. It's just like, this is one of those situations where a puck at the net might go in, as it did for multiple Michigan defensemen on Saturday.
Well, I don't know if it was the first period or the second period, but and they were interviewing somebody.
Yeah.
And he said, well, their goaltending is really, really shaky, so we just throw pucks at the net. And I was like, whoa!
In Yost. On the way out.
I was like, one, completely accurate.
It's true.
Two. All right.
I mean, to be fair, the opposing team is probably aware out of the rink and in their locker room at that point. And if they have any sort of watching, I mean, the Lambert goal from Friday, it looked like Lebedev ducked underneath it.
Yes.
And just like,
he got out of the way.
It was almost like a shortstop, like just getting underneath a line drive.
Yeah.
And it looked like, so I was right above it, and it looked like, oh, Lambert hit a corner, and then you see the replay from ice level, and you're like, oh. I mean, it was a nice shot, but the goalie definitely Olay'd that one with his glove.
Well, and the first goal on Saturday is just a routine shot that he drops in his feet and doesn't know where it is. He gets beat on, how many wraparounds did he get beat on? Like,
well, he got beat, I think, on one wraparound, but he got to the post and kind of like pushed the puck like right out in front of the crease, where I know Granowitz scored at least one, if not two, of those.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about Granowitz, because he's come from not playing at all.
No, to Michigan's third leading scorer or something like that now.
And I don't know how much of this is just being in the right place at the right time. Like, there was a goal he scored where Beecher basically was trying to throw it off the back of the goalie, not this weekend, but a couple
weeks ago. Notre Dame, I think, was his first one.
And it went off him and into the net. But, you know, being in the right place at the right time is a useful skill.
Well, if you can position yourself in the crease and get on the right side of the defenseman, you can become that either bank board target or, you know, have your stick where it needs to be and have a redirect or a quick tap in for a rebound or something. And, you know, it's kind of thought that, like, Becker was sort of that for a year or two. It hasn't happened a whole lot in that role since, probably 2 years ago. I mean, but Granowitz has done a really good job of providing that.
I mean, to play that kind of role, you have to be on a line where someone can get you the puck.
That's also true.
Granowitz has generally been playing with Beecher and Lockwood.
So yeah, they switched it last night.
They did.
And they put Hayhurst on that line, and I kind of really liked it. I think you have sort of three different skill sets of high quality there. I mean, high quality, you know, we'll see. But you have, I mean, Hayhurst's ability to create in his stick handling has been probably as good as anyone on the team.
He probably scored the best goal of the year on Saturday.
Yeah, and again, you're kind of turning Wisconsin defenseman inside out and then beating the goalie who was, you know, kind of there.
It was still like...
But it was... I tweeted that this was coming for him because you've seen him create some stuff and get very athletically acrobatic in getting the puck on net. And it's, you know, he's got a couple goals, but he also picked a corner and sniped on Friday too. So it was his second goal of the weekend. You know, putting him with Lockwood, who has not had the production... Maybe that we would have hoped
picked it up in the second half, but
well, his play has picked up. Yeah, I don't think that his tallies have picked up, but then pairing him also with Beecher, who's really coming on, and usually when he's on the ice, he's the most intimidating and best player on the ice.
Yeah.
So combining him with a creator and then just an all around good player who can fill in different areas that could be a potential number one line.
Yeah, and they're now two games closer to being in contention, even though they didn't move up in the pairwise. They helped their RPI, and these days the pairwise is basically a slightly modified RPI for like head-to-head and stuff. So I was looking at collegehockeyranked.com. They run Monte Carlo simulations about the end of the season. And before this weekend, Michigan needed between 6 and 8 wins in the rest of the regular season to be in position at the end of the regular season.
So they needed these two.
Against the worst team in the league at home. Mm-hmm. And now they have 6 games left, and they need at least 4 of those, and then they'll need some breaks to be in position at the end of the regular season. But they still have a playoff series that's probably going to be against a team that's in the top 30.
Yeah.
So that will...
Because everyone is. other than Wisconsin.
Other than Wisconsin. So they'll like getting that series at home would be important. And then, I mean, they're 6 points out of first place. They're in sixth place in the league, and they're 6 points out of first place.
And they have two games in hand on that team, which is Penn State. They have two games in hand on Ohio State, who's 3 points ahead of them. And everybody else who's within 4 or 5 points of them, they play two times. So it seems like, in theory, if they win these six games, which is asking a lot, don't get me wrong, but if they do, they it's not like, oh, then they're in good position. No, it's then they hang a banner for winning the Big Ten.
So they're
they're
in sixth place out of seven teams, and they control their own destiny to win the league.
Yeah, and they have Notre Dame at home, and they have a home in Caesars, I guess we're calling it now, with Michigan State, who's been good, but they haven't been as good lately. They have great goaltending and great defense, and they score timely goals. Sounds like Michigan. And then they have Minnesota, who had not looked good for a while, but has come on strong, kind of like Michigan has, because when Michigan was making their run, Minnesota was about where they were, maybe a game or a little bit more in front. But Minnesota has made a similar run because they are maintaining a plural point lead over Michigan after Michigan has gone, 6-1-1 in the last eight games.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is Michigan has the best goal differential in Big Ten play right now, which is...
I guess they walloped Penn State and beat Notre Dame by a couple goals each time.
I mean, it's close, but, they...
Well, and that's the thing is, they weren't good, and we were comparing them to good Michigan teams, but in the context of this Big Ten, they lost a number of coin flick games or games that, they had leads in at least halfway to two-thirds to... near the end of the game, and so it's not like they're can't skate with any of the team.
I mean, but we've had this conversation multiple. It's not that they can't skate with them. It's just that
something always goes wrong.
Well, and also they've had some bad puck luck before this weekend. I gotta see what their shooting stats are now.
Yeah,
but before they were
you score 12 goals,
close to the worst team in the country in terms of shooting percentage.
Yeah,
and that's probably partially skill and partially luck
and partially Wisconsin.
I just meant
you mean
their
everything.
Play up to then.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, they've had a couple of their younger guys who are their more talented guys come on. I mean, I think that's why Minnesota's playing so much better, is they were one of the youngest teams in the country.
Right.
And so those
will happen.
And those teams improve more quickly over the course of a year.
The other two things that I think are necessary to mention are the things that get them in trouble. One are taking penalties, and I think that they only took...
There were two penalties on Saturday.
There were one for each team, and I think that Wisconsin was one, maybe two of three or one of two on Friday. There was less than – Michigan gave up fewer than five power plays all weekend, which that's great because – and their penalty kill has been better, but that is something that obviously can get you if you give the other – a good offensive team more chances. And the second thing is, the thing that killed them in that second Ohio State game was so many odd-man rushes. Well, I think I had them down for two all weekend. Yeah. So when you clean those two things up and you have Strauss Mann, you're in contention every night. And there's no reason that they can't be in contention in any of these games and potentially win them if they play like that.
It's just you got to get a lot of coin flips in a row.
You do, but you're kind of stacking your deck if you're not giving the other team advantages.
Well, and they've started scoring more than two goals a game. They scored 6-4 against Penn State.
They get the puck out of their zone cleaner. They're not turning... There are stretches when they don't, but you can see guys hitting the right passes, behind the net to on the boards to the guy cutting through, And
I mean, that was one thing that really stood out about the Saturday-Wisconsin game, which I watched from the end zone, which is not usually where my vantage point is. So they're rushing up the ice, and they're making passes they're making backhand passes to guys who I don't think Wisconsin expects it to go to that meet a guy's stick, and then you can get a clean rush into the zone. And that really was not happening earlier in the year. So I feel like I have a good feeling about how they're being coached because they've...
Especially in their own end.
Right. They've been so much better on defense this year. They're very tight. There's not a single defender who I'm ugh, about. And that... is almost never the case. There's always somebody who's just making a ton of mistakes out there, and
they still have their breakdowns. I mean, the Martin attempted clear
but
on the power play last night.
There's a difference between
a huge gaffe and
this is
a problem.
We name a hockey activity after a player. Have we said this before? I think we have.
The Downing? Downing. Of course. Yeah. I've referenced it a bunch of times.
So, like, I think that they play intelligently, and they've just it's just taken a long time for the systems to kind of get into place because...
Well, it looks like the coaching hire was good, getting Mayotte.
Yeah. I mean, he's also a goalies guy, right? So...
Yeah, I mean, you could see him have the potential to break out the end of last year, but this year is... I mean, I keep writing sort of the same things in the goaltending section because that's what I keep seeing, and like you mentioned, how many goals are on him? Like, almost none. I mean, he had a bit of a rebound goal on Friday night that he kind of padded out to the left, but it was also a sharp-angle shot, and, like, the guy had to shoot it. Well, first of all, he was unchecked, and second of all, he had... I think glanced in off the post. So, you know, that's a good shot. You're not always going to save those, especially on a rebound. But that's probably the worst goal he gave up all weekend.
Yeah, I mean, like on Saturday, there was the power play goal, which was a slam dunk. There was a second slam dunk cross-crease pass. And then he had a shot from the dead center.
With an extra attacker.
With an extra attacker where he was...
a first-round draft pick.
And there were like four guys screening him.
Yeah.
So... And then he comes out and makes a giant stop immediately after that to keep the game
with 30 seconds left and an unchecked guy in the slot. Like, so, if that goes in,
you feel bad.
People fall out of the press box.
You feel bad because Michigan needs pretty much every game they can get. Like, they're 6-1-1 over the past 8 games, and I still think about giving up a goal against Penn State, which was just bad luck to have that game tied in the last minute.
Yeah,
and then the kind of rogering that happened against OSU. So,
but this team is now watchable and kind of fun. And
say watchable,
but I mean, you know, like, okay, they don't have like the mad magician's feel that some of previous teams were in Yost, but they don't play terrible hockey. I mean, there are, you know, like you said, in the Ohio State series, they had kind of a bad stretch in a period. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's about the only bad stretch in a period that they've had in a month and a half. So,
well, yeah, and I think they were a little overwhelmed in the first period on Friday by Wisconsin, who had a ton more shots and goals. And then it felt like, you know, the rest of the weekend that most of what Wisconsin was getting was harmless. So it was kind of like, you know, bad Penn State where you look up and they've got 40 shots and you're like, I don't think Strauss-Mann has had a great A.
Yeah.
And of course, he did late, but like for much of that game, like there was really not a whole lot of danger.
No, and you know, this is a weird series where you know what the other team is and you know, okay, look, if we get, like, I think it probably was Person said, if we get shots to the net, we're going to get goals.
Yes.
And so, okay, they're going to have a couple opportunities because they're one of the most talented forward groups in the country. And even their defense. I mean, I started when I was counting down how many people were drafted on Friday night before the game. Like, my tallies kept going, and I think it would end up being like 10. And they're not all seventh rounders.
No.
So they have good players. So to some extent, that's going to happen when you play against a team with skill.
I think it didn't really happen as much as I expected going into the weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, Caulfield had a couple moments on Friday.
Yeah,
but he didn't really get a good opportunity on Saturday.
He had a couple, but man made saves. He also missed the net, which is also going to happen when you're a shooter. Nobody shoots at, you know, 70% in hockey either. So you know that, all right, we need to try to stay disciplined, push them to the side, get guys on people, and then get shots on net, and we're going to get goals. And that's what they did. And that's all that you can really do against a good team like that that has Swiss cheese at once you get to the blue line. Not even just the goalie, but, you know, their defense isn't great in their own zone either. So when you play against that, you have a different mentality.
I think it's really mostly the goalie.
Well,
he's so bad.
He's not great. No. So, you know, it's a big series against Michigan State. Seems like we have that in every sport now, but like,
well, every series is a big series until they get swept in one. And then...
Right. I like their matchup against Notre Dame because we've seen it.
Yeah.
And Notre Dame is playing differently. And then you just have a big series in Minneapolis to end the season.
Yeah.
But, you know, this is one where Michigan State has also come back from the dead as a program. It seems they're on the verge of a tournament bid-ish. And
they're very much on the bubble. There's only one team that's really safely in right now, and it's Penn State.
Because I don't even know if they are. I mean, aren't they like...
They're 10th, so...
So that's...
So they're not...
They are not
10th. I'm saying...
Penn State is... Ohio State is 15th. Penn State's 8th. Okay. You're right. So they went up. They got a win over Ohio State last night. So that's a big win for them. But we've seen them too, and I'm not, like, terrified.
Of
Penn State? Penn State.
We're not playing...
No, I know, but I mean, just, like, they're a good team, and Michigan is matched up against a lot of these teams.
Yeah, I mean...
So...
It's just that they don't have the night in, night out, like... We're going to put this line on the ice, and they're going to score a goal at some point.
No, but if they keep that Hayhurst Lockwood Beecher line together, and you don't get guys kicked out and suspended for games, and you know that sort of thing, I would be interested to see that line get more volume and see what happens.
Sure, well, I mean
we're going to probably see it, hopefully. But
yeah, I mean 4-2 is much more tractable, it feels, than the 7-3 it was 2 weeks ago, even though. They did lose one of their games just because it's like, all right, we can win 2/3 of these games down the stretch and be in a spot where we can play ourselves in the tournament in the first round.
Well, when they win a game, it's not a surprise anymore. Like it was. I mean, it was starting to get to be that towards the end of the first half of the season. You're just like, something goes wrong in every game. It's not happening anymore.
No.
So maybe that's some luck. Maybe that's the development.
They're definitely having a little bit better luck, but they are playing much better as well.
Yeah.
All right. On the next weekend, hopefully Michigan can keep it rolling.
Yep. On a nice Friday-Monday series.
Thank you for listening to the MGO Podcast. I am Ace Ambender, along with Brian Cook and Dave Nasternak. Mark D'Antonio, come out to midfield so I can drag your hide around this stadium like Achilles did to Hector.
Who's got it better than us?